This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
And then they'll ask for your ideas on how to build a stronger WBAI. So mark that date on your calendar, Saturday, May 2nd, 4 to 6 p.m., for a report from the WBAI local station board. Only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 on your FM dial.
Well, you're not going to want to miss that one. Because this is listener-supported, non-commercial, in deep crisis, WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City, where it is exactly midnight. Please do stay tuned for what's happening next, which, if all goes well, should be this. Moorish. Orthodox Radio Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there. right. Can that guy ever play the bar bat? I'm sure you will agree that he can. But what some of you may be inquiring is the bar bat, and who is that guy? Well, the bar bat is the Persian lute, that is to say the Iranian equivalent of the Arabic oud. And, of course, many of you knew that. And that guy happens to be Hussein Beiruzi Nia. And we were just listening to the title cut from his album Midnight Sun, which is available from a label called Seven Eighths Music, for reasons to which I am not privy. But maybe we'll be hearing more of it. In fact, definitely we'll be hearing more of it later on this evening, because Hussein Beiruzi Nia is definitely a virtuoso on the bar bat. And let's see, I should say that this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. And my name is Bill Weinberg. And, well, let's see, what do we want to touch on tonight? I want to talk a little bit about, I want to wrap up the discussion, perhaps, about that we began last week, actually began the week before and continued through last week, about Somalia and the pirates, and generally what the whole spectacularized showdown between imperialism and the jihad means now in the post-Bush world, at least. And maybe the global grounds have shifted a little bit, and maybe global perceptions of what's going on have shifted somewhat. In any event, they've been long overdue for a shift, I would certainly argue, and will argue. And then I sort of feel that it's incumbent upon me to address the moment of crisis which has reached us here at WBAI, because I know that it's on the minds of many listeners. And next week we're going to be asking for your money. I believe that next Tuesday night on this radio show, I am going to be asking you listeners for your hard-earned dinero once again. I know that the fund drive starts next week, and I think that next Tuesday night I'm going to have to pitch. So better to get everything out in the open the week before. Now, I have to say that I'm... one of the reasons that we have to get beyond this crisis at WBAI is because the programming can't always be meta programming, so to speak. It can't always be, you know, talking about the station, right? I know it's very postmodern to be self-referential, and you know, the medium is the message and all that, but the message can't always be about the medium, right? I mean, at a certain point, radio is here to talk about what's going on in the greater world, in New York City and in the United States and on planet Earth, and Somalia and Pakistan, which we're going to touch on tonight. So, you know, it can't be, the discussion cannot be 24/7 about WBAI, right? It sort of defeats the whole purpose of being a radio station if all you ever talk about is the radio station, right? So, you know, that's one of the reasons that we have to get past this whole crisis. Another much more pressing reason is that the station has to survive. And, you know, we sort of trot out the eventuality of the station not being here as a threat to, you know, hold over your neck like the sword of Damocles in order to coerce you into giving up your hard-earned money for the station. So I'm afraid that there's sort of a boy who cried wolf syndrome which might be at work here. So I'm going to say tonight, before the drive begins, that the notion of BAI not being here is actually being discussed with a degree of seriousness and not merely as an empty threat. It's a very serious situation. So tonight we're going to have a little bit of meta-programming, that is to say, programming about the programming. After we do a little programming about Somalia and Pakistan, and after I read some announcements, and also after we hear some more barbat music from Hussein Beruzinia. And then, last of all, we're going to take listener phone calls, because we're not going to be able to for the next 2 weeks at least, because I'm going to be pitching. I'm going to be shaking you down for your money. So for the next 2 weeks at least, we're not going to be able to do that. So we're going to do that tonight, and we're going to, because I've been wanting to air all of these issues which we've been addressing. And tonight's going to be the opportunity. So hang in there, campers. We're going to let it all hang out tonight. I promise you we'll save the last half hour for listener phone calls. But first, there's a couple of announcements I want to get to, and while I'm finding them on the internet, which I failed to do, we're going to hear a little bit more from Hussein Beruzinia on the Barbat from his album Midnight Sun. And by the way, a big shout out to our good friend Mitch Ritter in Beaverton, Oregon, for laying this music on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. So do stay tuned and sit back and enjoy this. Thank you.
All right, more sounds of Hussein Beruzi Nia on the barbat, or Persian lute. His album Midnight Sun, available from 7/8 Music. Here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM. I'll give the station break now. It is 12:30 here in New York City. And, all right, let's see if I can get through everything that I need to get through in the next half hour so that we can save the last half hour for you, the listener, to call in at 212-209-2900. Write it down, 212-209-2900, because it would be really, really good if we could actually hear from people other than the usual 10 people who always call in. You know who you are. Because I'd like to think that I have more than 10 listeners. And that's actually not a bad place to begin the discussion of Somalia, actually, is with the question of whether this radio show has any listeners and whether what I do is at all relevant. Because sometimes I really wonder, you know, I mean, after last week, I had pulled off what I considered to be something of a media coup, you know, being one of the first journalists in the United States to actually talk at length about the crisis in Somalia with a representative of the unrecognized independent government of Somaliland, which has been an independent entity within what appears on most maps as Somalia since 1991 and the fall of the Siad Barre dictatorship. And we spoke at length with the North American representative of the Independent Republic of Somaliland, one Dr. Saad Noor, about the pirates and the Islamist insurgents and the international community's failed efforts to try to bring some kind of stability or government to Somalia proper, or what could be called, government-controlled Somalia, even though there isn't any government which is in control there. The area where the so-called transitional federal government has got official control, which is largely a fiction. They've been trying, you know, since 1991 to impose some kind of order, and failed utterly. And every intervention, most recently with the U.S. backing up the Ethiopian invasion with airstrikes and intelligence and probably with special forces troops, has just plunged Somalia deeper into crisis. So here, you know, throughout all of this time that the headlines have been focusing on the bloody violence and chaos and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people displaced and starvation and massacres and aerial bombardment and all of this, all the horrible things which have been going on. Throughout this whole period of more than almost 20 years now, there's been an independent, stable government in Somaliland, an independent, de facto independent enclave within Somalia, which the outside world largely knows nothing about. Something of an irony. So, you know, the notion of rebuilding from Somaliland and, you know, following their model, where, as Dr. Noor said, They built from the bottom up. You know, they started holding local assemblies and actually started at the level of households and then on up through, you know, neighborhoods and clans and sub-clans, clans, greater clans, and then the entire, you know, the regions, and then finally their republic, which is in the former British colony of Somaliland, with the rest of the country being the former Italian colony. So, in contrast, everything which the international community has been attempting to do has been a top-down affair and has failed and has only succeeded in escalating the violence. So, you know, I don't mean to kvetch too much, but I'm going to point out that, you know, once again, I thought that it was something of a real media coup to get an in-depth interview with this Dr. Saad Noor about the situation. And I should say, by the way, that I transcribed it and that it will be appearing in its entirety, word for word, on my website, World War IV Report, as soon as we post the new issue, May 1st, which is just a couple of days from now. It'll be Friday, I believe, is May 1st. The transcript of the interview will be appearing on my website, World War IV Report. But, you know, I figured, okay, here's an opportunity to try to get the word out in a wider way. I could, you know, take some quotes from the interview and put together a piece of journalism. And went about pitching it to some of the likely places, and no interest at all from The Nation, from The Progressive, from a couple of other places that I tried, no interest. So, it makes me wonder what people are thinking. And, you know, it seems that, you know, as much as we complain about the government and the mainstream media, we allow them to define the terms for the debate. And if the government is demonizing the Islamist insurgents or demonizing the pirates, then there is a always going to be a sector of the left which is going to just rally around them and say that, oh, you know, the Islamist insurgents are freedom fighters, or the pirates are actually the volunteer Somali Coast Guard, which is trying to heroically protect the Somali coast from toxic waste dumping. And there's an element of truth there, actually, but just an element of truth there. I mean, it's true that there has been an awful lot of toxic waste dumping and illegal fishing and all sorts of outlaw operations which have been going on, taking advantage of the chaos off the coast of Somalia for the past 20 years. And it's true that the pirates have largely chased them away. You know, that's got to be said. While that's true, it's also true that the pirates themselves are kind of an outlaw capitalist operation at this point. I don't think that they are merely the volunteer Somali Coast Guard. You know, I think that their main business, as it were, is to extort large sums of money at this point, okay? Even if they started out trying to, you know, it was a bunch of fishermen who weren't able to fish anymore because they were being, you know, the stocks were being denuded by these outlaw operations that were coming in from other countries, taking advantage of the chaos. Well, if they started out that way, I think that sooner or later, you know, they started to realize, or, you know, their leaders, their sort of, you know, maritime warlords, started to realize that, you know, they could get rich, and that's what they're trying to do. And I would imagine some of them at least are succeeding. At least by Somali standards, they're getting rich. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to oppose toxic waste dumping and illegal fishing because they're outlaw operations, well, you know, I mean, seizing a ship full of humanitarian aid and holding the captain captive for a ransom, well, that's also an outlaw operation, okay? So, but more to the point, there already is an actual functioning Somali Coast Guard, which is operating out of Somaliland, which has succeeded in driving off the pirates. And the pirates, in fact, don't operate off the coast of Somaliland. And yet nobody's interested in the Independent Republic of Somaliland because the White House is neither backing them or demonizing them, but merely ignoring them. because they sort of don't fit in to the agenda. Because the agenda is keeping Somalia together as one state. And as Dr. Saad Noor pointed out, all of the entities which have been vying for control of Somalia, whether they are in the pro-U.S. camp or with the transitional federal government, which Ethiopia and the U.S. have been backing up, or the Islamist insurgents, which are fighting them, they all want a central state in Mogadishu under their control. So the Independent Republic of Somaliland doesn't fit into anybody's agenda. So the White House and the mainstream media are neither backing them nor demonizing them, but merely ignoring them, and consequently, so do the so-called progressive forces or anti-war forces in this country. So, rather frustrating. So I hope at least that even if I couldn't sell the story to the nation or the progressive, I hope that there are at least some listeners out there who appreciated the interview. And in fact, I did run into a couple of listeners over the course of the past week who told me that they appreciated the interview. So I just want to let you know, if you're listening tonight, that your appreciation is really appreciated. Because I do wonder if there's anybody out there who understands what it is that I do. You know, really, really, really do wonder. Both from the rather uninspiring response that I get these days as a freelance journalist attempting to write about stuff like this, and from the level of phone calls that I get when I take phone calls on this radio show. So people tell me, oh, don't take phone calls, Weinberg, because, there's lots of people out there who are listening who don't call in, who appreciate you. And, well, you know, I'd like to know that that's true. And like I say, I run into some people sometimes who tell me that they appreciate the work, but they don't call in. So I guess it is true. But I still feel this imperative to take phone calls and just get a sense of who's out there and if they get it. And usually I'm disappointed. Every once in a while we do get a phone call, which is a genuine gem. Anyway, we'll see what happens tonight. So we'll take phone calls in about 20 minutes if I stay on schedule. I'm really going to endeavor to stay on schedule. Whoever's calling in now, you can hang up because we're not taking phone calls for another 20 minutes. Write down the number, 212-209-2900. All right, now the way the news cycle goes, there's only like one big story at a time, and right now it's swine flu. So, it's all swine flu all the time. And meanwhile, I guess nobody noticed, or not many people noticed, that there were airstrikes in Pakistan today. Which brings us to the next item on the agenda, and the one more thing that I'll say about, because this sort of ties into how we're going to approach the question of Pakistan, one last thing to say about Somalia is that for all of the knee-jerk rally around whoever the United States happens to be bombing this week or demonizing this week, in Somalia, the people who were rallying around the Islamist insurgents and are now rallying around the pirates, they're going to have to make up their minds because they're enemies. And in fact, the insurgents, or when they were in power as the Islamic Courts Union, their one claim to fame is that they drove out the pirates. And now, of course, the pirates are back now that they're out of power. So, the Islamist insurgents are probably being backed by, to one degree or another, by elements in the Saudi regime. They definitely don't like the pirates because the pirates are interfering with them getting their oil to market. So you better make up your mind. Okay. Okay. Now this brings us to the question of Pakistan. Okay. Airstrikes in Pakistan today. The government in Pakistan a few weeks ago, they cut a so-called Sharia for peace deal with the Pakistani Taliban, as they're calling themselves, they, in one enclave, which has been at war for the past couple of years in the borderlands between Pakistan and Afghanistan, called the Swat Valley, there was a deal where, okay, the Taliban were going to lay down their arms, not surrender their arms, but at least lay down their arms and stop fighting the government if they got Sharia law in this enclave. And they could impose their own, you know, have rule by mullahs in this enclave in the Swat Valley, which, by the way, is what the transitional federal government in Somalia is trying to do as well. They're trying to buy peace with the Islamist insurgents by imposing Sharia law. And I should make clear that this is their own, you know, sort of Taliban interpretation, both in Somalia and in Pakistan, their own sort of really, really hardcore Taliban interpretation of Sharia law, the most, you know, draconian interpretation of Sharia law, which is not based on anything which is in the Quran, by the way. It's based largely on tribal traditions and not anything which ironically would be recognized by Orthodox Islam in the de jure, if not de facto sense. Orthodox Islam, if you were actually going by the word of the Quran, as opposed to the you know, sort of tribal jurisprudence which has sprung up around it over the centuries, which is now taken to be Orthodox Islam by the contemporary you know, Taliban and jihadi types out there. Anyway, so back earlier this year, back in, I guess it was March, the government of Pakistan decides that they're going to buy peace with the Taliban insurgents, at least in this one area in the Swat Valley, by saying, okay, you know, your mullahs can rule. And there was a big outcry, first, over the fact that just after they cut this deal, and just after, you know, Sharia law was being imposed in the Swat Valley, and the secular courts were essentially overturned, and it was going to be councils of reactionary mullahs who were going to be running society. Just after this was imposed, there was a video which was leaked, which was on TV in Pakistan, of a 17-year-old girl being brutally whipped for apparently she was accused of adultery. Later, according to some accounts, she actually hadn't committed adultery, but she had been engaged to marry a Taliban militant, presumably in an arranged marriage, and she jilted him. She decided she wasn't going to go through with the marriage. So it's uncertain exactly what the facts are, but in any event, this was the kind of, it became clear that this was, you know, what was being imposed in the name of Sharia law. So this was the first outcry over the so-called peace deal. The second development was when a part of the peace deal was that they were supposed to lay down their arms. The Taliban was supposed to lay down their arms and accept that they, you know, they got their Sharia rule over this one enclave of the Swat Valley. Well, immediately after the deal was imposed, they decided to go on the offensive and spread their rule. And they moved on from the Swat Valley to a neighboring district by the name of Bunair, and hundreds of Taliban gunmen spread out from the Swat Valley and took over the neighboring district of Bunair. And they were initially, by the way, resisted, not by the government, but by the local tribal militia, who didn't want to be under the Taliban and took up arms and resisted them, but they were overwhelmed because the Taliban has superior firepower. And the Taliban established themselves in Bushehr, and incidentally, they there is in Bunair there is a shrine to a Sufi saint, as there are many throughout Pakistan and throughout Taliban throughout Afghanistan. Most of the ones in Afghanistan were shut down by the Taliban. And in many cases desecrated or destroyed by the Taliban or turned into barracks by the Taliban. And that's exactly what the Taliban did at the one in Bunair district in Pakistan. They turned it into a barracks. They turned the shrine to the Sufi saint which is, you know, revered by the locals, into a barracks, as just as a, just to desecrate it. Because, of course, for these, you know, ultra-Orthodox Taliban types, Sufism is heresy. So, so this was again a violation of the peace accord. They were just supposed to accept, you know, okay, they got their little enclave in the Swat Valley and they were supposed to accept that and they didn't, and instead they took over Bunair. So today, that happened a couple of weeks ago. Today, the Pakistani military responds by doing what? By bombing Bunair. So, you know, the poor residents of Bunair, you know, first they're betrayed into the hands of the Taliban, and, you know, they're under Taliban tyranny for a couple of weeks, and the local shrine to the Sufi saint is turned into a barracks, and, you know, they're humiliated and under the gun and occupied by the Taliban, and then they get bombed by their own government. So this is, you know, once again, an example of what the secular forces in the Middle East and the greater Muslim world call the two poles of terrorism. And, of course, the, you know, the bombing of Bunair, which happened today by the Pakistani military, was immediately applauded by the White House, or at least by the Pentagon. It was actually a statement from the Pentagon rather than from the White House. Which applauded and called for more of the same, called for the Pakistani government to pursue the offensive. And it should be noted that, you know, of course, the, you know, Washington has continued to, the CIA has continued to carry out drone attacks throughout the same region. And they've actually escalated since Obama has taken office, unfortunately. And there are now probably, although I'm not sure that anybody's got any official statistics yet, but probably hundreds of thousands and at least tens of thousands of internal refugees, displaced persons, have been forced to flee from largely from the aerial attacks, but I would imagine also from the fighting on the ground. So this is not good. You know, this is all very, very bad. And, you know, I mean, I would argue that, you know, these two tendencies sort of play into each other. Because, I mean, on one hand, we know that the Pakistani intelligence services, the ISI, the Inter-Services Intelligence Directorate, itself is kind of, you know, internally divided and is sort of playing both sides. And there are elements which are, you know, in bed with Washington. And there are elements which are closer to the jihadis. And, of course, back in the 1980s, Washington was encouraging this alliance with the jihadis because they were, you know, supporting the Mujahideen war in Afghanistan. And, of course, Pakistan has got its own angle going on with wanting to keep the insurgency going in Indian-occupied or Indian-administered Kashmir. So, obviously, the you know, the role of the Pakistani military and intelligence apparatus is itself very compromised and equivocal. But beyond that, you know, more fundamentally, as long as the U.S. is carrying out drone attacks in Pakistan, and as long as the Pakistani army, with U.S. encouragement, is bombing its own territory, the jihadis can, you know, say, we are the resistance. We're the heroic nationalists who are standing up against this aggression and humiliation from the imperialist West, blah, 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 blah. So the two sides fuel each other. Now, is there, you know, some kind of magic solution which is going to make everything all right next week? No, there isn't. And, you know, once again, a part of the whole pathology is that everybody's thinking that there's got to be some kind of, you know, magic policy solution which Washington can implement, which is going to make everything all right. And that's just not the way it works, all right? There's already so much, you know, bad karma, which we've already been committed to, that the violence is going to continue. It's not a question of, you know, somebody's going to implement the magic policy which is going to make everything all right. The question is, who can we support? Who can we loan solidarity to who is actually on the ground attempting to move things in the right direction at the grassroots level. And in Somalia, I argue that that is, well, perhaps the government of Somaliland, and at a minimum, if not the government of Somaliland, then at a minimum, the independent press and the independent, I would imagine, human rights activists and social workers and so on, in Somaliland, where at least there's enough elbow room for that kind of thing to exist, enough elbow room for freedom for there to be some kind of an independent press. And, you know, and there are independent websites, independent radio stations and so on, which are functioning in Somaliland. You can find them on the web. And who is that in Pakistan? Well, in Islamabad, you know, you've got the military, which is obviously a part of the problem. And then you've got the civilian government, which is also ostensibly secular, but is kind of authoritarian and corrupt. And not particularly progressive, and also has at times had their own sleazy deals with the jihadis, and also, of course, is kind of, you know, ruling at the behest of the military, and certainly does not seem to be reigning in the military, even if it had any inclination or power to do so. If it had the inclination to do so, it seems like it wouldn't have necessarily have the power to do so. All right, so who then is there to support in Pakistan? Well, RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, spoke about them a couple of weeks ago. They are largely in the refugee camps, which have been established since the 1980s when hundreds of thousands were forced to flee Afghanistan. Into Pakistan by the war which was going on, and are still there today, 20 years later. So these have turned into sort of like permanent refugee camps, like you see in Palestine. And they have established sort of like autonomous zones within these refugee camps, which while the rest of Afghanistan has, you know, come under the rule of the Taliban and the Mujahideen and the warlords and all these reactionary warring factions, they were able to establish in the refugee camps in Pakistan sort of autonomous zones where there is secularism and gender equality, and they're running their own schools, which are coeducational, and running their own development programs and social programs and cultural programs and so on, which are aimed at keeping alive secular and progressive values. Now, unfortunately, what's starting to happen is that as a consequence of everything which we've seen since 9/11 and the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and the subsequent destabilization of Pakistan, it has, of course, been completely counterproductive, as many of us predicted in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. The first thing I said when I got on the air, 2 weeks after 9/11, was that U.S. intervention military intervention in Afghanistan would be counterproductive, and I feel completely vindicated in having said that now that neighboring Pakistan has been destabilized. And now these Taliban elements are waging an insurgency in Pakistan as well as in Afghanistan. And subsequently, RAWA is under attack in Pakistan as well as in Afghanistan, and the Pakistani government has been forcibly repatriating the refugees back to Afghanistan and shutting down the refugee camps, and RAWA is beginning to lose their autonomous zone. And in particularly, the coeducational schools which they have been running are coming under threat. And there's a statement which I just received from them, which is up on my website, under the title Pakistan, Taliban Threaten Co-Educational Schools, where there is an urgent communique from RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, where they say that they have been forced to shut down some of the co-educational schools that they have been running because the Taliban have been threatening to blow up the schools. And the local neighbors and the people who live around the schools have been pressuring the government to shut down the schools because they're afraid that it's going to draw attack from the militants. So this is a really, really urgent situation. So you want to do something to help? Loan some support for RAWA. Get them, if you have a little bit of money to spare, get some money to RAWA. You can find them online at rawa.org. Send them a check if you can spare a little money. And help them, keep their schools open and keep some semblance of freedom and secular values alive in this rapidly escalating situation. Okay, now it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and let's see if I can get through the last thing I wanted to talk about in 2 minutes so that we can take listener phone calls in the remaining 30 minutes. When that last thing I wanted to talk about, speaking of rapidly escalating situations, is WBAI. And this place seems to be just as polarized as Pakistan, unfortunately, at the moment. And rumors are flying that there is going to be imminent regime change here at WBAI. And I continue to maintain a fastidious independence from either of the, oversimplify somewhat, either of the factions. Now, I'm going to explain why I say oversimplify somewhat, because I've sort of been called out by certain people for referring to two factions as if there was just JUC, Justice and Unity Coalition, and ACE. I can't remember what ACE stands for, A-C-E. When in fact you could say that there's more. That's an oversimplification, because not all of the people who oppose the JUC are in the ACE, and there is a large independent camp among the people on the local station board, the LSB, who are not in the JUC faction. Nonetheless, let me give a station break. It's 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, and my name is Bill Weinberg. We're going to take phone calls very shortly at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. And we're going to briefly address the situation here at BAI because I'm really afraid, I have to say. I'm really, really worried that here we are apparently, or at least according to the rumors. I don't know if they're true or not. I'm not privy to any inside information. But here we are apparently poised at the brink of regime change here at BAI. And apparently both the program director and the interim station manager are, if the rumors are to be believed, are to be ousted by the Pacifica National Board. Then, beginning in mere days, beginning next week, we're going to be going on the air and asking you for your money. And it's really, really imperative that the listeners support BAI, because BAI is more deeply in crisis than ever. Whether or not the rumors are true that regime change is underway, well, the reason that we've been pushed to this point is because things are not going well here, okay? Things are in crisis. And one way or another, we need to get out of the red, for starters. We need to, get back on our feet financially if we are to survive. And I'm not saying this in some kind of long-term, eventuality, theoretical kind of sense. I mean very, very imminently. I'm talking a matter of months. It really appears to have come to that. So, you know, maybe it's taboo to say that, but, I don't feel there's any point in hedging our bets. So, okay, now, so I understand that if the situation is that critical, why people feel that it's necessary to take draconian actions. On the other hand, I do fear that the draconian actions could only precipitate the collapse. I do fear that that's a possibility. Because what has led to, not the only factor, but a very, very significant factor, of leading us into this state of crisis has been the fact that the place has been so internally divided for so long. And, a regime change move by Pacifica could exacerbate that in a very, very serious way and lead to complete paralysis. So, I appeal to the listeners to support WBAI in spite of the leadership here. And by that, I mean not only the management of the station, but also the people on the LSB. And I don't mean all of the people on the LSB, nor all of the management of the station, but the real intransigent, loudmouthed, pathological ones who exist in both camps, who are putting the supremacy of their own faction above the interest of the station. Okay, and those personalities exist in both camps. And I acknowledge that I'm oversimplifying somewhat when I say both camps, but just to use it as a convenient shorthand, both camps. There are also, I will say, people who are truly selfless and dedicated in both camps and really sort of view things the right way, even if they sometimes cut a little bit too much slack for the more pig-headed elements within their own camp, okay? And I'm speaking entirely honestly here, okay? This is, in fact, how I view the situation. And when I got into the station tonight, there was a screed taped to the door of WBAI in the manner of Martin Luther, entitled Think Independent, which was signed by Kathy Davis, who is the unpaid producer of the programs Health Action and Heart of Mind, as well as the WBAI Public Affairs Director, and is staff delegate to the WBAI Local Station Board and a director of the Pacifica National Board. And Kathy writes that we should feel free to copy, post, and distribute this message. Unfortunately, I was not able to find this message online. It should definitely get up onto the internet. Toot sweet. But I am going to take the liberty of reading it over the air. It's a short statement, and as soon as I'm done, we'll take listener phone calls at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. Think independent. Pacifica, founded by Lou Hill, put forth the mission, quote, to establish and operate for educational purposes in such manner that facilities involved shall be as nearly self-sustaining as possible, end quote. And, quote, in radio broadcasting operations to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors, to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all of such groups, and through any and all means compatible with the purposes of this corporation, to promote the study of political and economic problems and of the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms. End quote. We must return to this mission, not just in word, but by actions taken by governance, the Pacifica National Board and the local station boards, by management, national and local, and by the staff, paid and unpaid, to serve and preserve the sacred trust that is Pacifica. It is only by working together that WBAI and Pacifica can forge a stable and relevant future. Years of partisan politics have eroded the standing of WBAI and eroded the station and the network's ability to sustain itself financially. It is time to work cooperatively with each other in the service of this great institution. Please, don't fall prey to partisan bickering, fear-mongering, personal attacks, lies, and distortions. No one is immune. We must each be personally and politically vigilant, not to succumb to inbred prejudice and intolerance. The voiceless and the suffering come from all walks of life, many races, nationalities, and classes. We cannot allow one's pain to drown out the sound of another's. The issues and concerns of all people, all of us, must somehow find a voice. In order for this to occur, however, we must first, once again, save Pacifica and save WBAI. Pacifica is a radio network of the people. We need you, every individual one of you, to become an active participant in this organization. Bring your time, your energy, your talent, your creativity, your concerns, your caring, your activism, and your financial support. WBAI and Pacifica are in serious financial trouble. We must all put aside partisan politics and efforts to gain or maintain control and join our efforts together to build an organization that will continue to serve and grow for generations to come. If you have not already, please become a member of WBAI or renew your membership. Come to the station to answer the pledge line. Fill out an application for the Community Advisory Board. Join a committee of the local station board. Help us organize a fundraising event or support a fundraising effort. Consider running for a place on the local station board in the next LSB election. Whatever you do, please get involved. Do something. Don't stand by silently while WBAI slips away into the abyss. Think independent, self-activate, be tolerant of difference, and strive collectively for the future of all. Sincere regards, Kathy Davis. Thank you, Kathy, for writing that. I echo your sentiments very, very strongly. And I do hope from the bottom of my heart that somehow we find the wherewithal to pull together as a community and to see to it that WBAI comes through this crisis. I'm going to make one final appeal before we take phone calls for the remaining 20 minutes. Okay, I only ranted on for 10 minutes longer than I intended to. I believe that next week we're going to have to pitch. So I appeal to if there's some people out there who want to support the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade and want to support WBAI, but don't have the money, please come in and answer the phones next week. We're going to need people to come in and answer the phones next week, and you can get to meet me, Bill Weinberg, in the flesh, and tell me what a wonderful job I'm doing. Okay, let's take listener phone calls. 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900 is the number. 212-209-2900. What are we talking about tonight? We're talking about Somalia, Pakistan, Islamism, secularism, and imperialism in the greater Middle East, and WBAI. That's what we're talking about tonight. We are not talking about whether planted explosives brought down the World Trade Center, and please don't bother us with irrelevancies, okay? WBAI, you're on the air. Ooh, WBAI, you're on the air. And it'll be nice to hear from some people who don't routinely call in. So if you're one of those people who's never called in the radio show before, feel empowered to do so tonight. You are encouraged. Hello? You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah. You're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air.
I can't hear you.
Well, I can hear you just fine, so please speak. Okay, never mind. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio, please. Turn down your radio. Hello? Turn down your radio, please. Turn down your radio. You should all know the protocol by now. Hello? Well, this is just thrilling. I know what we're going to do. We're going to go back to Hussein Beruzi Nia and hear some more wonderful music on the Iranian lute. That's probably what we're going to do if things don't shape up pretty quickly. Am I making some kind of egregious technical error here, Max? Is that?
No, the gremlins are trying to keep the people from speaking. Try that.
Okay. Once again, Max of the Midas Touch. WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. Why does that happen? That's really
because
annoying.
The phones move along.
WBAI, you're on the air.
That's better. I can hear you now.
Glad to hear it.
I'm reading an email now that says that Bernard White and Tony Riddle fired, and that there's going to be a demonstration in front of in front of 120 Wall Street tomorrow at 4 p.m. And I don't know. I mean, what do you think about this? I mean, is this?
Well, for starters, I don't know if it's true or not. I haven't heard it from the horse's mouth, so as far as I'm concerned, for the moment, it's a rumor. I've already sort of said what I think about it. I've got very, very serious criticisms of the faction which supports management, the WBAI, the JUC. On the other hand, I don't see, any Nelson Mandela figure waiting in the wings to pull everybody together. So I really do fear a frying pan to the fire maneuver. I'm not sure that this is what is mandated. I think that this could be a bad move.
Well, I'm going to show up tomorrow and just sort of see if I could talk to different people and get some... I don't know, get involved. I mean, I think that that letter or the missive from Kathy Davis is definitely inspiring and called for, and hopefully a lot of other people feel the same, because I don't know. I mean, I've lived here for a long time, since I was about 5 years old. I'm 29 now, and I've been listening to WBAI shortly after the coup, and I can say that as far as New York goes, you know, if BAI goes, then maybe it's time to seek greener pastures elsewhere. I don't know where that might be, but it might be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
You know, I feel exactly the same way. I really do. I feel exactly the same way, except for me, you know, I'm 20 years older than you, and I was born here. So it would be really, really sad if I had felt like I had to leave New York. But I feel like more and more like a stranger here every day. And if WBAI goes down, like you say, that could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Thank you for your call. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Bill. I'm going to have to pull over because I'm riding in the streets of Newark. But I'm sort of conflicted as a person who usually doesn't call in on air on these things, but believes that WBAI has to exist. I'm conflicted on this whole thing. As a union guy, I don't like to see anybody fired, but in my experiences with BAI in the past and how they've chased away, sometimes inadvertently, new people that would want to get involved in the station, it almost makes me want to believe that we need something like to not start from the total beginning, but we just need a whole bunch of new people. And I know people would be involved. I was involved on a periphery back in 97 when Valerie Isler was still station manager, and it was a UE shop. And, I mean, UE wrote when they fought the whole what is actually a worker thing, is a volunteer a worker, and UE took that up to the labor board. I mean, one of the most brilliant briefs I ever saw, which I still have, a rather lengthy brief about what is work and how a person can be a worker and be unpaid and be of value to an organization, especially a non-profit organization. And the whole irony of that situation was is that as a progressive institution, they were responsible for having this labor board decision, which actually has affected thousands of people in similar situations all across the country that really can't be union members now, per se. So, you know, and when they talk about the prospective or the rumored firings, on the one hand, me as union guy said, well, you know, let's give these guys a chance, but
on the other hand, you feel like it's chickens coming home to roost. But
I don't want to use it. You know, that's what I'm saying.
I also want to point out that Valerie Van Isler, who is the one who brought that case to the NLRB, is not around anymore.
Right. You're quite right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks for your call.
All right, Bill.
See who else we can talk to here. Thank you for your call. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air. Oh, come on. 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio and speak up.
Yes, hi. I'm kind of glad that if he was fired, I'm glad that he's out. The station has been in this dead zone, this place of stasis for so many years, and I think Bernard has been very unresponsive to change. The other thing I'd like to see is that the Pacifica Foundation in this next, fundraising enforce some kind of discipline where they tell us that some of the money be dedicated to getting new digs where we're not paying an arm and a leg, or that maybe that we start getting onto one of the towers at Alpine, New Jersey, where you would be paying like maybe a tenth of what you're paying for the Empire State Building. I think that's an ill-advised move, the way the station is even broadcast. But radical changes are needed, or this station is going down the tubes.
All right. Well, for one thing, we've got a lease here at 120 Wall Street, which I'm not quite sure when it expires. But unfortunately, we're stuck here for the moment. And believe me, nobody feels more alienated down here in this sterile, oppressive building than I do. As I said earlier, I feel obliged to, you know, sort of argue the other side of the coin. As I said earlier, you know, I understand that extreme circumstances have brought us to the point where people may be making extreme moves, but I'm not sure that this is going to bring about change for the better. My fear is that this could end up precipitating exactly what is ostensibly feared.
I mean, you may be right about that, but the one thing about the lease, by the way, is that in a very tiny, minor situation, that's what lawyers are for, to break those leases, even if there has to be a negotiated payout. That can happen, and it might well be worth their
while. Okay, we'll look into it.
But, you know, but I'm just saying, to me, either I would like to see the cage rattled severely.
Well, you've made that clear. We're going to see who else we can move on to. Thanks very much. Who else we can squeeze in? Thank you for your call. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio, please, and speak up.
Sir?
Yes.
I feel privileged, first of all, to be connected. Second of all, I've been listening to this station for years, and it is my fear that this takeover is synonymous with something from some force of a hired, let me say that someone did not like Mr. White and that gentleman Tony, and the message that was presented today or was read this morning in regard to a misappropriated bias statement, and that was the reason why they came in and took the keys and this and that. If something happens to WBAI and this Mr. White has changed, I will never listen to you guys. I think this is the most unjust thing that could possibly happen, and I think you're walking a very soft line yourself, and I think that long statement that you just read, some part of yourself is in agreement with this coup, too. You're not getting the back of your co-workers simply like that. And I don't, once this happens, forget about your radio station. Forget about everything about this New York. You're corrupt. You can't even say anything now if it's anti-Semitic and this and that. Yo, man, you guys are, you're hypocrites, man. Taking the cash on these fundraisings, and then you put the, lock these guys out.
Well, hang on a second. I haven't locked anybody out, and I'm not taking any cash. I do this program for free.
My coworker had worked side by side in delivering the message for the people. And even if I was in disagreement with some of the things he was saying, for the years of service that he's done, I get his back. And clearly, you seem to be playing too safe, man. You're too safe. And if something happens to Mr. White and that guy Tony, forget about it. I won't even turn my radio on. And I feel bad for even giving you guys anything. End of story.
Oh, boy. Well, this is exactly an example of what I was talking about. This is what I fear this move is going to bring about, which is why, all right, let's move on. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Why did the station move from 8th Avenue to...
Oh, God. It was mandated by Pacifica.
Oh. Well, that, you know, the rent is one of the problems, and the lease runs for one more year, I have heard it said by Bernard White. One more year.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay, thank you. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Dr. Block, I'd like to respond to some of those fools who were talking and insulting you or the program.
Well, I'm not quite sure which fools you mean, but please go ahead.
Well,
turn down the radio for starters.
Okay, yeah. I'll shut it off.
Please do. Thank you.
First, what I'd like to say is that I feel very strongly about this issue. Amy Goodman is involved, in my opinion, and I'll tell you why. Years ago, I had listened to her, and she was marvelous, and she is still a wonderful reporter. But I remember her starting with WBAI and getting her breaks from WBAI. And now that she's become independently famous, I think that she owes something to WBAI. I've never been to the firehouse, but I think in such desperate times, she could allow WBAI to use those facilities that she has now. And in a sense, return what was given to her. That's the first thing that I'd like to mention. Now, I have the utmost respect for her. She's a marvelous person. However, I do think that she could give WBAI that space. Secondly, if WBAI could move, maybe it could sublet and allow other people, especially in the economy, people involved with investments or so on who need a space, like quarters, different areas, so they could make up some funds that way. The third I'd like to mention, to me, this is something that I never had a chance to say before. I heard when there was the From the Vault on, people from Pacifica said, well, we're supported by, and they mentioned the Ford Foundation and other income that they received. And to me, that was blasphemous. That was disgusting, because I, teaching at William Patterson University in Wayne, New Jersey, I certainly could ask if William Patterson could in any way sponsor to give some money or help out WBAI. Or I could write for grants from because I'm a writer anyway. I've written a book, and the Carnegie Foundation. Now, I had assumed a long time ago from what was said on WBAI, and rightfully so, that these corporate underwriters, these foundations...
We got to wrap it up.
What I'm saying is that I think the time has come to do what WNYC does, to ask Metropolitan Museum of Art to sponsor, to ask foundations, colleges, to do everything.
Well, that's a departure from the model of listener-supported radio, but thanks. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio and speak up.
Yes, this is John from Astoria. I wanted to, excellent show as always. I wanted to echo your feelings that you mentioned a few minutes ago. I'm a native New Yorker, and I travel quite a bit in my business. I seem, after all these years, like I don't longer belong here. It's changing too much in the direction that I don't want to go to. And secondly, but most importantly, I love WBAI. I love everyone there. I enjoy the programs, and I contribute as much money as I can. But there's continually problems at that station,
to say the least.
Yeah, and how can I, if I can use, excuse me for saying it, but how can I in good conscience continue contributing money to a station I've never had any problems?
Do you want it to survive?
Yes, I do.
And then it needs your money.
Well, that's, I do that, but what's the conflict that I have? You know,
Look, we're trying, yeah, some of us are trying to work it out.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
Some of us are trying to work it out. All right, there are people, you know, who really are putting the interest of the station first, and not the stations of their own, and not the interest of their own faction first.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so hopefully, you know, now it's time for those people, the independents, as Kathy says, mm-hmm. to come to the fore, and that's what I'm hoping is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm hoping that there's going to be a window of opportunity opening in this crisis, and the people who really put the interest of the station first and not the interest of their faction first are going to come to the fore and have their day.
But can you see my point of view? You know,
obviously, that's why we're talking tonight.
Yeah, I understand, yeah.
But I urge you to support the station.
I've done it for 26 years, and I continue to do it, but it's something that's difficult. But anyway, I'll let you go, but thank you for a great program.
Right. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call.
Bye-bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Yeah. I have made many,
not many... Not tonight, Monroe. I'm sorry. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Real quick.
Thank you for a very good program.
Real quick.
I play for churches. I'm an organist. And I know many churches, small churches, not the big Catholic and those people. They buy those abandoned buildings and they fix it, so that the building becomes a new building then. And I suggested this to a WBAI person, and there were many objections. It must be near a subway. It must have an elevator. It must have the... Like, WBAI is looking for already made building. You see? Just how the churches who don't have the contacts like WBI can do it.
Yeah, right. Well...
WBI can do it, too.
Maybe. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I wish we could keep going with the conversation, but we can't, because it's almost 1:30 in the morning on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI. Do stay tuned for Weaponry with Tom Whisker coming up next. Some good calls tonight. Thank you.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.